Business Pilot.
There were a lot of people that would come to me and say, there's a problem with this. What I think we should do is XYZ. XYZ was a terrible solution to that stated problem. And I think my past self would go, other people are jokers.
Hey, it's been a while, but this is What I Might Say, the podcast where we give advice to our younger selves, but our younger selves also have something valuable to give to us. I thought I'd come back with a guest. This is someone I've been working with for the past year, and they are a podcaster as well. Justin's been in the game a lot longer than I have, so I figured I would have a lot more to learn from them than I would from myself this week. So I'm going to pass over to Justin now and get straight into it.
Hi, I'm Justin MacArthur. I'm 31 years old and a podcast producer based in Adelaide, South Australia. And back in 2019, I kind of faced an inflection point in my career where I made a decision about whether I would be keeping going with media or whether I would be sticking to the new job that I had in banking. I'd been in banking for about 2 years at that point. It was a fairly stable job, and looking back now, I could have had a very stable career in banking, kept doing that. That would have not necessarily been the most satisfying thing to be doing, but it also would have been a lot more stability than the career that I've got now. But I now work full-time in podcasting, and that is my day-to-day, and I wouldn't be able to... I couldn't at the time envisage where I would end up now, and it's been an incredible 6 or 7 years since that inflection point for me. So it's really interesting looking back on that point where I was very scared to be taking that plunge. It was almost a bit of an embarrassment to be considering having a run at working in the media again, which feels very strange to me now as a person that now works full-time in the media. But I'd had a lot of attempts at a media career prior to that point. I'd finally found a stable job completely out of left field, and then I was seriously considering walking away from it. And that was a scary time. So that's to set up where I was at that point, the person that I was and the person I was about to become. I'd actually been on Centrelink for a period of time before I got this job in banking, and I was doing, I don't know if you've been on the Job Seeker program or anything like that, but if you as a listener have been involved in that, you might know that you need to apply for a certain number of jobs over a period. And this was one of those jobs that I had applied for that I thought I had absolutely no chance of getting, completely out of left field, had had no experience in economics or finance or anything to do with the banking sector at all. And I applied for it. I think it was the last on the list of jobs I needed to apply for to hit my quota, and I got it. So as much as I don't approve of the Work for the Dole program in general, it was a fluke. I ended up there. And I knew that financially for me, I was putting myself in peril by considering walking away from it. And I'd had 2 years working in banking prior to that point where I'd worked myself into a more stable position. So I started off just refunding fees that were charged in error. Then I started to work in the discharge of mortgage section of the bank. And then I moved into securitization, which I used to explain to people as the thing that caused the 2009 financial crisis, essentially combining loans into a package and then on-selling them to hedge funds and other banks. And I mean, I processed some transactions with a value greater than $2 billion. I worked with some very high value transactions in that time. And so I knew that if they were trusting me with that only 2 years in, I probably had a bit of stability, even though contractually I was still a temporary worker. Like I was actually employed by a labour hire agency and wasn't directly employed by the bank. So there was a little bit of instability, but I felt fairly certain that they would back me in and that I would have a position for a much longer time. At the same time, I'd had offers of PR work, public relations work. I'd done some advertising for Drake supermarkets here in South Australia. And I'd also started to get my eye into podcasting again. I'd started to become aware that it was picking up again. I wasn't to know that a year later we'd have the COVID pandemic and there would be a huge number of podcasts, a huge podcast boom, nor that a year after that I would get a job with a Sydney-based company and then a year after that I would be building my own business. But at that point, I had a feeling that there was something out the corner of my eye, in the periphery, that was calling to me, but I had no idea, you know, whether it was a mirage or an oasis, if I'm allowed, if I'm allowed a metaphor. It's kind of unclear to me still whether I jumped ship from the bank or whether I ran towards the media. I mean, I did have a year in between where I didn't necessarily, I wasn't working in podcasting. I worked on a science magazine actually for a year, and that was where I was working, was in print media until COVID all but obliterated the last vestiges of free print media in basically, you know, the idea of going into a cafe now and I'm going to pick up a free magazine and that free magazine is going to pay for itself through advertising. That idea, I think, is dead. It was already dying in 2019, but in 2020 it died. That said, I think I needed an out. I needed a creative outlet. And I could also tell a little bit that I was becoming not an incredibly unpleasant person to be around, but just a person that I wasn't super happy with being. I was feeling creatively stifled. I was working long hours, which I do now, but because I care about my work. And some of that balance was off. So it's a little of column A, a little of column B. There were a few moments towards the end of that job where I had a real sense of I'm in the wrong place. And some of those were very much people within the bank and not people that I worked with directly, but it was a very large building with lots of people in it. And the way some of those people spoke with contempt of people that were taking out home loans, especially as I myself was dealing with kind of unstable housing at that point. And I know a lot of people around me were really in a much worse position than I was. It became really untenable for me to be working for the institution that was kind of on the other side of that equation. We also at that time had the Banking Royal Commission, which happened in 2018 and 2019, on a federal level in Australia. Not to get too political, I'm going to try not to get too political on this, but that time as well was a very politically charged time to be working in financial services. Obviously, it's always politically charged because you're dealing with money and money is core to a lot of people. Not to me, obviously. I am in it for the love of the game, but other people, I am assured, care about money. That's a joke. Money is important. I feel like I should say this. But yeah, I don't know that there was a linear path from where I was when I left banking to where I am now. It's easier to look back and kind of fit a story onto it, give it a narrative of, you know, I left this big institution and then I started doing this indie stuff and it paid off immediately. But it really didn't. I had a couple of years of floundering, but floundering in a more motivated way than I had been before I was working at the bank, because I actually had a safety net. I felt that I could go back to that job, not necessarily on that level. I might have had to work my way back up to a more stable position, but I knew if I'd done it once, I could do it again. And so I turned around and I started to make bigger called shots, basically. I started a science magazine that flopped. I started a podcast during COVID that was always going to be short-lived. That was basically the portfolio piece that I then sent in to Ample, which was a Sydney-based company, still is, I believe, a Sydney-based company that works in the podcast industry. And I worked with them for a year remotely. A lot of podcast work also moved remotely because of the pandemic. Again, this is information that I couldn't possibly have known when I left the banking sector. Like, there wasn't going to be this push to remote work or this shift away from the eastern states. But I also, as someone that was focused on local media, was poised to, it sounds weird to say capitalize on that sort of shift because you're talking about a pandemic, but I was poised to, I guess, respond to that sort of change. I was always going to be savvy to a power shift to, you know, a more local media environment. And so from that, I then started building my own skills and networking with people locally who had the same sort of skills. And from there, I got really interested in building local podcast community as well, because one of the things that you miss when you work remotely is going down the pub and chatting with a person that you value in terms of professional work, but also you can get a sense of as a physical person with, you know, arms and, you know, a torso. You can go from the neck up, but it's nice to see people with a full body. So yeah, it was a nice shift for me to then start working with my company, PZinner, on the community networking side of things. And I feel like these things have fallen from each other, but they were never things that I could have conceived of when I walked away from my very serious necktie-wearing, suit-wearing bank job. I guess if I were to speak to myself leaving at that point, I don't know. I'd be really interested in having a conversation, actually. I'd be really interested in getting back in touch with what that person was worried about at that time, because to some extent I feel a bit distant from that person that I was. So it would be hard to figure out exactly what to say to them, because I don't know if they'd listen. But I think saying it's going to be all right, it's going to work out, would have given me a lot of confidence to make some of these big calls more confidently and more quickly. And that may have helped me get to where I am now faster. I think I've got to a really good place. I just would have liked to be here for a year already, or for a couple of years already. And yeah, I feel like I had the toolkit and I didn't know how to deploy it or where to deploy it or what people to reach out to. And I've become a lot better in the past couple of years at knowing my worth and knowing what other people see as valuable in my work, which is a really hard question to ask when you get into the media. I periodically do try to slip back into the headspace of me when I was working, you know, a 9-to-5 job, very much put your head down, do the work, muscle through, even on bad days, even when you're not at your peak. And that 9-to-5 office culture, I think, really gave me a missing work ethic that really is valuable in creative work. A lot of people try to say that creative work and other forms of work are these completely separate realms. You know, you're a creative, so you're free-flowing and you do what, you know, you sleep until whenever and you make art when the mood takes you. And that's certainly true if you're a hobbyist. But for me, realizing that applying the same discipline that I was applying to Excel spreadsheets to editing and to performing and to writing would give me the same sorts of results that I was getting out of my banking job actually really has served me. And the fact that I, you know, can balance a spreadsheet does help me in my creative fields. The number of artists that can't deal with numbers is staggering. And so being able to be a bit of a numbers guy in that space is still very valuable to me. But yeah, I guess going back to the headspace thing or the character of my past self that I'd be kind of asking this question of, we're getting very, you know, philosophical here, which I love. I think that person was extremely stressed, but also had a keen awareness of what the stakes were and the fact that at that point I was really working very hard to be where I am now, because I did have an awareness of, I didn't know exactly what it was going to be, but I was like, there's some media future or creative future. Maybe that exists as a hobby alongside work. Maybe that exists as something that I do to support other people in my free time, but I'm still, you know, I spend a couple of years developing my skills a bit more, but then I do media for the bank, or I apply for, you know, other financial services, but also communications work. I had some sense of, at the very least, if I take this plunge now, it will benefit me, and it will be better than this shit. That's truly it. It was this trade-off of whatever I'm doing will be better than this. And now I think in my day-to-day now, I don't always take the time to go, yeah, but it's still better than any other job. Like, it's still, even on a bad day of this job, it is better than any other career I could possibly be doing. It's where my passion lies. It's also what I'm good at that other people are less good at, and I think that's a good thing to find. You don't have to be the best at what you do. You just have to be better than other people, and other people are schmucks. So just keep an idea of the fact that other people are schmucks, and you'll be way better at what you do, and you'll be way more confident in putting yourself out there. I guess my past self was much more cynical than I am now, and I wouldn't frame things with as cynical a voice as I did back then, because I had not spent 2 years working in an institution that did not care about me, right? I now have spent a lot more time taking care of myself, being a part of communities, being around people that I value and that value me. And now I really think that I am more optimistic again about what people generally bring to the table. But I still think there is a kernel of truth in the idea that people are schmucks. And what I mean by that is people have a really good sense of what it is you should be doing. People claim to have a good sense of what it is you should be doing. That's not necessarily an articulated vision of the thing. That's just, they're not living in your head. They're not dealing with the stakes that you're dealing with. They're not processing all of the factors that you're processing. And the other component of that is there is a law that comes from science fiction reviewing, actually, called Sturgeon's Law. It's one of those laws that is very generalized and doesn't always apply. But the idea of Sturgeon's Law is that 95% of everything is bullshit. Years and years and years ago, there was this debate around whether science fiction was valid writing. But this guy called Sturgeon came up with Sturgeon's Law, which is that 95% of everything is bullshit. Not just science fiction writing, but 95% of all writing. And you can apply it more broadly, that 95% of all creative works are crap. And we're seeing that, you know, in the era of AI slop, boy, that number's probably only increased. You know, maybe we're up to 98%, 99% of everything is crap. When I say that, or when my past self said that people are schmucks, what I mean is there are a lot of people that are very good at making the thing that they want to make for themselves, but it is so, so much harder to make the thing that appeals to a broader group of people, or even that just is the really distilled version of the thing you set out to make. And I kind of didn't realize as well that the privilege that I have of having had a background where I get to spend so much time making creative stuff is that I've developed skills that other people don't have. And that's a gift in a way that I've spent that time and I've been able to spend that time. But it also is an edge, and thinking of things in purely cynical economic terms, that is something you can build a career around. I don't think that I had the cynicism to get to that place of confidence, because I wouldn't have let myself be that harsh and economically rationalist. I would have just said, I would have equivocated a bit. I would have said, well, yes, I've had those experiences, but that doesn't make me better than anyone else. It doesn't mean that I'm any more qualified to be doing this, blah, 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 blah. And what that does mean is that I don't have the raw materials that are better than anyone else's raw materials. You, as a person listening to this, might have and probably do have more interesting stories than I have to tell, but I've developed my skills as a storyteller and as an editor and as a writer to be able to put that to a platform or put that out to people in a way that's better than a lot of people have. And that in itself is a skill. So what I should be doing, and again, this comes back to the community aspect, is I should be platforming other people. If what I'm really worried about is I haven't earned the right to a better story than other people, that doesn't mean I shouldn't be telling the story. It means that it shouldn't be my story that is told. That's the conclusion that I reached. And that was kind of the synthesis of this economic rationalist pragmatism and my good hippie sensibility of the fact that, you know, yeah, privilege is bad in terms of like societal structures, and it sucks that every person working in the media is a white dude because they're the people that have had the time and resources to develop these skills. Yeah, that sucks. But I think I needed to find myself at the intersection of, firstly, in a bit of a, you know, personal financial crisis of, well, I need a career. And also, I needed to have that realization of, yeah, but I'm still bringing something to the table. And I think that's missing some of the times when we talk about privilege, when we talk about, you know, economics, or we talk about the media. I think bringing all of those ideas together was something I only could do having worked in such a cutthroat, cynical place as a bank. It's really interesting. If we had done this interview a couple of years ago, I would have been way harsher on the person I was when I left the bank, and I would have been way more flattering to where I've ended up. And I would have gone, well, clearly those were a couple of, you know, mistaken, wasted years where I worked in banking, but it's okay. We all, you know, for our sins, we all do things we don't love. And yeah, I didn't love that job, but the people that I worked with day to day were great people. The work ethic it instilled in me was fantastic. I really genuinely believe that a lot more people that are seeking to do something creative with their careers should do something else, anything else, for a period of time, just to get a sense of who you're making things for. Because what would be the point in, I mean, some people make art for other artists, sure. If you're, you know, John Waters or, you know, David Lynch, if you are a creator that is entirely trying to provoke ideas in other people so that they can create things themselves, maybe you can get away with being an artist for other artists. But for the bulk of us, we're trying to make art that gets people through the day. You know, the podcast that you put on your lunch break that gives you half an hour of cheer amongst drudgery, or the podcast that you put on, as I was doing a lot at the bank, while you're just filling in an Excel spreadsheet and looking for errors between the numbers you copied from file one to file two. If I hadn't been in that space, I wouldn't have understood who my audience was. And yeah, I it taught me so much more about the world. And ultimately, as an artist, as a fancy artist, what we're trying to do is reflect the world back at people, right? Even if you're just like an entertainer that isn't thinking too much about the political implications, obviously I think endlessly about political implications because I'm just that kind of person, I've got that kind of bent. But even if you're not that, you are trying to reflect some truth about the world back to people, especially in a time when there's so much crap out there. Again, back to Sturgeon's Law, back to AI slop, with so much inauthentic, you know, baseless, weird you know, it's politically motivated, but you don't quite know what the politics is. It's all craven. It's built around advertising. What we can do as people that are making stuff for ourselves or for smaller brands or smaller companies is set ourselves apart by saying something fundamentally true and fundamentally interesting because it is a part of the world. And if you haven't spent any time in the world, if you haven't touched grass, if you are, you know, a very online person, you can't do that. You can't reflect it because what you're doing is reflecting what other people have said, and what you're saying is just going to be a dilution of what they're saying as opposed to what you actually have to say yourself. So I very firmly believe that that was a fundamentally good thing for me, especially at that point in my life where I was becoming so cynical and such a, and probably a bad person to be around, probably a bit of a jerk just because I was getting so cynical. I certainly can still be cynical now, but, you know, I've got slightly less ego behind the cynicism at least. So, you know, I'm just one voice in a sea of voices.
Before we wrap up, I've got one closing question. This will be the only time I chime in. Do you think you're a jerk now?
Do I think I'm a jerk? I mean, definitely. Okay, let me try and figure out how to answer this because it is a very interesting question. Am I a jerk? Am I a jerk? I think I'm worse when I'm in front of a microphone and when I'm in front of a camera. And I think that's partly like even now when I'm trying to be fairly vulnerable, this is partially a persona. It is the person that is more confident. It is the person that is more articulate, that has all the answers. And yeah, I think that person's a jerk because nobody has all the answers. And pretending I do is going to be great for your podcast, but is not going to be great for the soul or not a way that I should approach life when I'm not in front of a microphone. That level of confidence isn't necessary, doesn't serve us. I think we should constantly be asking questions, not presuming to have the answers to them. So on that level, yeah, I'm a jerk. I'm a jerk right now as you're talking to me. In terms of who I am as a person, I think I'm reflective enough to notice that. And so that means that I'm, you know, at least doing, you know, a third better than I was doing at the bank because I was approaching the world with the same cynicism, but maybe with less reflectiveness. That I think is something that you need to develop. And for some of us, it develops, you know, it's the late onset second puberty where you actually kind of, you know, it's no physical change, but it is a mental change of like, oh, I'm actually slightly more conscious of my place in the world and my relationships with other people. And that ongoing process of maturity, it's a lifelong journey and probably one that this show is helping with because it is encouraging people to reflect. I've tied that in a neat bow. That's my tying it in a neat bow for you.
It's always so funny having these chats with other podcasters because we're constantly having these conversations where we're self-editing and making sure that we're not putting too much pressure on future self when cutting these episodes together. But what a great chat. Thanks heaps, Justin, for coming on. It's been a real eye-opener on what it's like to sort of make those changes in your life to be part of this industry, and it's always great to check in on that past self. Hopefully we can do some more episodes like this in the future. I'd love to get some more guests on, so if you're keen on traveling back in time and, you know, visiting your past self, please get in touch and we can definitely have a chat together. That'd be great. Otherwise, I might do some more hilarious or embarrassing stories from my career. But until then, thanks heaps for listening and we'll catch you next time.